And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, today we're going to talk about a God, but a little bit different than the God of the Bible. In fact, radically different God. But it may just be that the whole world is about to be converted to this new God. You may want to listen up. I'm going to give you his name and tell you who worships him today. And in fact, I have much evidence to the effect that there are millions of Americans who in secret, covertly worship this strange God. He's not really new, but he will be to many listeners today. Now, the topic for today is the mystery of this God. His name, I'll go ahead and give it to you up front, is Jabulon. Jabulon. Several ways to spell that. Even among Masonic lodges and different Masonic orders, it's spelled different. Some call it Jabulon, as in Jehovah, or Jehovah. You see, right away you have the J, which can be pronounced Jah or Yah. Then Balon. Now, it's usually spelled J-A-H-B-U-L-O-N. You can pronounce it Bulon or Jabulon, Jabulon, Jabulan. As I said, it varies, but I'm just going to call him, because it's exactly the way it's spelled, Jabulon. Jabulon. And I'm going to spell it for simplicity today, although you may spell it different. J-A-H-B-U-L-O-N. He is the strange God of the Rothschilds, the richest dynasty in the world. Jabulon is the mysterious secret God of the Masonic Lodge. And he is the mysterious and very, very demonic God of the Khazar Jews who rule the world. Think about it. A strange demonic God who's worshipped in kind or in common by Rothschild, millions of Freemasons around the world, and even the Jews who now rule over America and the world, and of course Israel. They're called Khazar Jews. And we're going to explain to you what a Khazar Jew is and how that's different, or some people think it could be different, than just a regular Jew. What is a Jew? See a new book out. I haven't read it yet. I intend to get a copy by a Jew. It's written by a Jewish scholar. Actually, he's a musician, but he's a scholar too. His name is Gilad. I hope I've got that pronounced right. I've never been good at pronouncing these exotic languages. I'm not too good at pronouncing Hebrew words or Yiddish or, well, actually, I'm not very good at pronouncing anything but English, and some people doubt that. So you'll have to give me a little bit of a break on these things. But I want to assure you, this may be one of the most important, oh, would we call it research messages you'll ever have? This God has as a secret number 666. This God, Jabulon, seems to be a composite God. And you'll discover that it's really a combination of three gods. Jehovah, there you have the J-A-H, also called Yahweh. Baal, the great fire god. He was represented, by the way, by the six-pointed star, by the ancient peoples of Babylon and Egypt. The Bible calls him Baal. And says the Canaanites and all of the ancient pagan peoples, their worship can be traced back to this Baal. And in the book of Amos in the Old Testament and in the book of Acts, we find that the Israelites themselves, the Israelites, when they came out of Egypt, they brought the Egyptian religion with them and they worshiped the star god, who was given many names by various pagan nations and peoples, but mostly was called Baal, B-A-A-L. The Masons, of course, today, the Rothschilds and the Khazar Jews would call him Bel or Bull. Then there's the god On, the third god of the unholy trinity. On, you see, was a city in Egypt. On. O-N. On. But he had other names as well, including the name Osiris. We know him as the sun god. And he's represented on our $1 bill by the pyramid. And there is the all-seeing eye of Osiris and his son Horus, staring at you every time you pull out a dollar bill to pay something. But don't worry, they'll probably get rid of the dollar before long. It's plunging in value right now. And it goes down and down and down. And they want to give us a new universal currency. Oh, too bad. We won't have Osiris to worship on our $1 bill anymore. But don't worry. It'll probably be some other god worse. And all of these gods, all of these deities of the ancients actually are represented by Satan. So probably the next universal currency that will be required around the world could be just a picture of the devil in some kind of a hornish representation. Or they might get rid of the money entirely. Might just give you a chip or a electronic tattoo on your right hand. That would go with Revelation 13, wouldn't it? That every person on earth will be given a mark or the name or the number of the beast either in their right hand or their forehead. We might not even have currency. It'll just be the devil's mark or his name. I say the devil. It could be his son. There's the son of God. There's the son of the devil, the counterfeit, the antichrist, the beast, the man with the number 666. Because Jabulon literally has the number 666. And as far as the Jews worshiping this Jabulon, you have to understand that they did worship Baal. They did worship the Egyptian gods. Amos in the Bible says that the ancient people of Israel apostatized. In other words, they betrayed the true God of the Bible and of heaven, and instead in his place began to worship the great fire god, the star god. That star is on the Jewish flag, the flag of Israel to this day. And its number represents 666. Just read my book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. One of the most well-known Jewish sages, Rabbi Moses Hasad, is quoted as saying that the number 666 in the Judaic religion has, quote-unquote, lofty messianic potential. Of course, because it represents Jabulon. But let's talk about the mystery of Jabulon. And I want to propose to you it has a lot to do with the Khazars. Now, you may say, well, I've never heard of the Khazars. Well, I didn't either until about 20 years ago. I began to study this area, and recently I've really dug into the study of the Khazars. Now, I'm going to start with the old saying, you know, once upon a time there was, because it's true. You know, once upon a time there was this empire and that nation and this kingdom. If we had a book of all the kingdoms that have existed on the face of planet Earth since the days of Adam and Eve, it would have probably filled up 50 libraries. It would be a big, big book. Maybe we could put it on a chip. We could make it very small. I don't know. In any case, there have been many, many kingdoms. Once upon a time, and this is reality, this is not fantasy, this is not Jewish fable that Paul talked about in the New Testament, there was a kingdom called Khazaria, the kingdom of the Khazars. They had a king. They called him the Kagan. K-A-G-A-N. The Kagan. That was great to be king. It's good to be king. It's wonderful. Except at a certain age, they killed him. He became a human sacrifice. It's not good to be king when they kill you at a certain age. But they wanted a very virulent, strong king. As I said, they had a sort of a mandatory retirement age for the Kagan of the king. Did you know that in the Judaic world to this day, there are many Jews who go by the surname or the last name of Kagan, K-A-G-A-N? I remember a CIA guy who was really an Air Force general, but he was really working for the CIA called, I think his first name was Robert Kagan, that I once met. Quite an interesting fellow that maybe I'll tell you about more of someday. In any case, their king was called Kagan. Now, the people of Khazaria were of, the historians tell us, and you can read about the kingdom of the Khazars or of Khazaria. Well, you can just go to Wikipedia, Google it up, Khazaria, or the Khazars, K-H-A-Z-A-R. It was a very large kingdom. In fact, you know, the countries that we sort of laugh about today, the stands, you know, the stands over in, you know, just above the Middle East up there, full of oil, by the way, very rich in oil today. Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, let's just call them the stands, okay? Up near Turkey, the Caucasus, the Crimea region of Russia, there was this great country, kingdom. It got bigger and bigger as it gobbled more and more people. And it was very structured and very powerful nation. And all the countries around it were quite frightened of it because it was an imperialist power. And, you know, if you were a smaller country nearby, you were very afraid that the king of Khazaria would target you and pretty soon you'd be gone. They would just digest you and put you as part of their kingdom. Huge. Probably about as large as the continental United States in size. Maybe not that big, but pretty big. Khazaria. Now the people had many strange religions. And you know, the king wasn't very, picky or particular. Long as you worshiped him as king, well, you could be a Christian or a Muslim. Although most of the people were pagans, nature worshipers. They worshiped all kinds of devil gods and spirits and from trees to rocks to, you know, they worshiped anything. Sort of like the New Age movement today, a polyglot, you know, a smorgasbord of crazy naturist pagan beliefs. Most of them were based on some kind of a lewd or lascivious sexual content. Pedophilia, homosexuality, and, well, let's just call it sluttery, were pretty common. A lot of sexual rituals and things like that. And it was said that there was even some cannibalism among the various tribes. Animal, even maybe perhaps human sacrifice. There were even some Jews, you know, that had their own religion. And as I said, it didn't matter to the king. You know, all these people had their various religions. They were sort of Turkish stuff. You met the Turkey people, a very lovely people to some extent. But then they mixed with the Mongols. In fact, in the 13th century, Genghis Khan came down with his Mongol hordes and he became the new king. But by that time, Khazaria was already diminished, was declining, and, well, that was the last of it because, you know, Genghis Khan and his marauders killed so many of them that a lot of the people just fled. But he was not the first to defeat the Khazarian kingdom because in the 1000s, yes, in the 1000s, the Russian Empire, which is just north of Khazaria, they became Christian. They were pagans too. But Prince Vladimir the First, I believe he's the one they used to call Mad Vlad. He may resemble today's Vladimir Putin. I'm not quite sure. Vladimir, of course, is a very popular name in Russia. Seems to be very popular among vampires today, too. Vlad was also called, I think he was the one called the Impaler. Because, you know, as he expanded the Russian Empire as prince, which is sort of like the pre-czar days. And he forced a lot of people to become Christian. He would give them a choice, of course. They could either be beheaded, and their head would sit at the top of a spear or a pike, as they called it. And so when he would come into a new town or a village, old Vlad and his troops would have, thousands of troops would have all these heads cut off, impaled on a pike or a spear. And they'd ride into town like that with the blood dripping from the head and he would give the people a choice. This can be you. He'd point to the heads. Or you can accept Jesus today and be baptized. They said he baptized 10,000 people in one town in one day. And then later he prayed to God and said, Lord, I've given you 10,000 souls this one day. Never has a evangelist saved 10,000 people and baptized them in one day. Of course, now they don't offer salvation in evangelical charismatic churches. They offer money. You know, come forward and we'll give you, 10,000. And there's nothing about taking off heads. It's just let us pickpocket your, purse or, anyway, that's another story. Things have changed. We don't take off their heads. We just take their pocketbooks in charismatic churches. There are many of them today, don't we? Well, in any case, the Khazarians were one of the most powerful nations in the world. And that was around the year 900 and then 1000. Until Prince Vladimir came from Russia. And he said, well, look at all these people down there that are not Christians. And he arranged with the Byzantine people in Constantinople, which is the Orthodox Church. And Vladimir, by the way, was you might call him a Russian Orthodox. That's what he became. When he himself, who was a pagan, converted to Christianity, he became an Orthodox Church Christian. You know, there's the Catholics and the Protestants and the Orthodox. And most Russians are Orthodox if they're Christian. Of course, some say the Orthodox are not Christian, but we're not going to discuss that today. Okay. But Prince Vladimir, about 1070, I think it was, give or take a few years, decided that he would make of Khazaria a Christian nation, and he attacked. And he won. Now, they were pagan, but it seems that maybe 100 years before that or so, before Prince Vladimir came in, something very dramatic happened in Khazaria. As I've told you, they started out pagan. They could worship anything. Then came some Christians and some Muslims and some Jews. But most of them were still in the pagan community, okay? Occultists, New Agers, nature worshipers, demon worshipers, etc. But as you know, when you allow Jews into your country, they become parasites. They're parasites in America. They're parasites wherever they go. And they group together, they congregate together, and plot against the Gentiles, wherever they go. And they stay to themselves, they're in seclusion, and they become the great merchants. They cheat the Gentiles because their Babylonian Talmud, their holy book, says it's good to cheat. Greed is good, as long as you're cheating the Gentiles. And if you can, try to kill as many Gentiles as you can, too. Because after all, the world is going to be inherited. All its wealth will be inherited by the Jews. The Jews will have a kingdom over all the earth. So in every country where the Jews are, Their leadership seeks to subvert that nation, as the Zionist Jews have subverted the United States, as they subverted Russia in 1917 and conquered it, because anybody who really knows history knows that Vladimir Lenin and Trotsky and, you know, all the others, the communists, were Jews. And there were only a few. They were really a great minority, probably only 1% of the Russian people. They're only 2% of the American population. But all the members except one of the Federal Reserve, and I'm including the chairman, Ben Shalom Bernanke, are Jews. The Secretary of Treasury of the United States is a Jew. All the Wall Street bankers, you know, that 1% they're complaining about of the rich, they're all Jews. Well, wait, Tex, Bill Gates, is he a Jew? Head of Microsoft, has all those billions? Yeah, he's a Jew. Well, no, wait, well, what about Steve Jobs? You know, the guy that just died of, look, he had $7 billion in his back pocket. What was he? Well, he was a Jew. Well, how about Zuckerberg? You know, he's head of Facebook. He's worth billions now. Well, yeah, he's a Jew. Do I have to keep saying it over and over again? They're all Jews. They do allow a few token Gentiles. It's interesting. Most of the token Gentiles, when they die, if they've been allowed to rise very high in business, their money's all taken away from them, usually on their deathbed or shortly thereafter. I'm telling you the truth. J.P. Morgan really worked for Rothschild over in Europe. They said J.P. Morgan was the richest man in America, had billions. But when he died, it came out that he only had about $1 million. Now, I know $1 million is enough for you and me to last for a long time, but for J.P. Morgan, people were shocked. What a measly little amount for the richest man in America. Seems that he was only sort of an overseer or a manager of Rothschild's fortune, and when he died, well, it stayed with Rothschild. In any case, the kingdom of Khazaria fell first to the Jews. It was subverted from within. The parasites who came in, I told you a few Jews did come in, and they began to invite more. There was immigration of other Jews, and they all came in. And they began to take all the important places at the king's court. Finally, the king himself became a crypto-Jew. That means secretly a Jew. That's what happened with Lenin and Trotsky. The Russian people thought they were Russians, but they were Jews. That's what's happening in America. We don't know that the Fed Reserve is made up of Jews, but they are. We don't understand that the top corporations in the United States, the banks and so forth. I mean, Goldman Sachs is run by its CEO and chairman, Lloyd Blankfein, a Jew. J.P. Morgan Chase is run by Jamie Dimon. They love those names, you know, Diamonds and Jewels and Goldman and Goldberg and all that. Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase Bank is a Jew. And it, of course, goes on and on and on. Not a Smith or a Jones in sight. Not even a Wilson, my friends. Okay, the Jews got in, and like parasites, like termites, they began to eat away at the foundation of the kingdom of Khazaria. Pretty soon, they were the Kagan. They were the king. They were his court. People thought that they were Khazarians, Mongol Turk blood, but they were Jews. Then they brought in, as history books show, and I've read about 20 of them now. The newest book I'm reading right now is by Dr. Shlomo San. He's a professor of history. I believe it's at the Hebrew University. You know, I'm sorry, University of Tel Aviv in Israel. Shlomo San. He's written an impressive new book, an international bestseller. It's even being sold in Israel, amazingly, although the Orthodox Jews, I think they all want to take him out and cut off his head in the guillotine because he's telling the truth. It's called The Invention of the Jewish People. The Invention of the Jewish People. But he has a whole chapter in here, wonderful chapter, with a lot of different resources, bibliography about the kingdom of the Khazars. So first, the Jews come in small numbers. And they stealthily deceive the people, trick them, Cheatham. You know, they're the Norman Madoffs. And finally, they're in charge. And people don't even know they're Jews, like in America. Ask somebody, you know, name 10 famous Jews. They say, oh, I don't know. Because in America, we really don't look at race that much. We might if the person's black or brown. But if they're a Jew, well, that's okay. Now, what I want to get at is this. The Jews took over Khazaria. They were the king. They were the royal court. They were the merchants. Then they brought in their rabbis from next door, Baghdad. Did you know that the Jews basically ran what is known as Iraq or that country today? There was a very thriving Jewish community with rabbis and so forth throughout the Middle East, but particularly in the Iraqi, which was, you know, Samaria or Babylon. That's what Iraq is. There were the Jews, and many of the Talmudic rabbis were invited over to Khazaria by the king. The king was a Jew. Now, historians today, and they're wrong, now we're finding out how wrong they were, they believe that the king of Khazaria converted to Judaism. But in fact, he was a Jew who pretended to be a Khazarian and a pagan. But he just came out finally when the Jews became so strong that they controlled the whole country, including the kingdom itself and the king's throne, and said, guess what? I'm a Jew. I've converted. Sure. Sure. So he quote unquote converted to Judaism. And then he invited quote unquote the Khazarian people to convert as well. And I suspect he gave them the same advice that Prince Vladimir of Russia had given the Russian people. It would be better if you converted. If you don't, well, off with your head. So Khazaria became a Jewish kingdom. Now I want you to think about that, friends. The most recent kingdom that they had was over 1,000 years ago. Well, the Jews didn't really have a kingdom as such. They had Herod, who was their pretend king, but the Romans controlled them. And now, well over 1,000 years after Jesus, in the 10th century or so, even before that, really beginning probably in the 7th or 8th century, the Jews had another kingdom. The kingdom of Khazaria belonged to the Jews. That was made up of 95% of the people, at least, who were not Jews. But they converted. And they had to learn all the Jewish rituals. They brought in, the king and his court brought in the rabbinical authorities from Baghdad, Iraq, or Babylon. They were brought in with their Babylonian Talmud, their most holy book, and the people of Khazaria were taught the Babylonian Talmud. So the Khazars became Jews, and their king was a Jew. And they had a Jewish kingdom. Finally, their kingdom. It wasn't in Jerusalem. It wasn't in what was called the Holy Land. But it was even more powerful until Prince Vladimir came and conquered the Jewish kingdom. What happened to the Jews of the Khazarian kingdom? Most of them fled. And when Genghis Khan came in the 1300s, the rest of them fled. Where did they go? More about that when we return. This is Tex Mars. You're listening to Power Prophecy. We're talking about the mystery of Jabulon, who was, in fact, the god of the Khazar Jews, and remains so today. Hello, friends. Tex Mars again. You know, I am going to have a wonderful, fun time on November the 16th. Now, that's the day and night that I go to Washington, D.C., actually right outside of Washington, D.C., and I've been invited to be a guest speaker, one of two speakers, in fact, that night, for a conference November the 16th, that's sponsored by the nation's number one independent nationalist newspaper, the American Free Press. AFP, it's called. Now, the American Free Press and another publication, the Barnes Review Journal, are holding this conference. And they've invited me to be a speaker and a second gentleman named Dr. David Irving, I-R-V-I-N-G. Now, here's the good news, folks. I want to meet you there. I'd love for you to come and listen to David Irving and Tex Mars as we speak at this AFP conference. Now, listen, it's going to be casual. I mean, don't come in your shorts and your, you know, your pajamas, but wear some slacks or something and a, you know, some Dockers and a nice, you know, shirt. And if it's cold, you might have to wear a jacket or whatever, but don't come with a tie and all. If you want to, you can. I mean, I like people who dress up. I don't do it myself. I'm not going to be dressed up. I might just have a light sport coat or something just over a t-shirt. It's probably all I'm going to wear. But I'd love for you to come. David Irving, by the way, is one of the world's greatest living historians. He's author of books. He specializes on World War II. Let me give you the title of some of David Irving's books. He authored Hitler's War, and it was a bestseller throughout the world, but especially in Great Britain. And then more recently, he authored a book called Churchill's War. There's also books like The Secret Diary of Hitler's Doctor. I think I'd like to hear about that. Then there's The Final Battle and other acclaimed books. You know, David Irving is so famous that some years ago, it was claimed that they found a secret diary written by Hitler himself. And it was published, and I guess the guy who found it in the archives in Germany was going to be paid millions of dollars for this diary. And then they gave it to David Irving and said, is it real? Is it a fraud? Is it a forgery? And David Irving was so well respected, and he studied it and said, yes, it is a fraud. This is not Hitler's handwriting. And then finally, the guy admitted that had it, they admitted that it was a fraud, and they were trying to, you know, basically deceive and make millions off of Hitler's diary. But it wasn't his diary. David Irving was the guy that outed the fraud. So you can see he's a very well-known historian. Now, unfortunately for David Irving, he's been under a lot of criticism from Zionist Jews over the last decade or so. You see, if you write the real history of Hitler and World War II, how, you know, World War II really got started and about the Holocaust, things like that, that's not acceptable. That's so David Irving has really been criticized because he lacks real history. The guy, you know, reads and speaks numerous languages, including German. So he went to the actual source documents. He wasn't just writing from what other people wrote and books and such. He actually went to the archives. In fact, he interviewed many of the top figures, the ones that weren't hung at Nuremberg and other places. He interviewed some of the top German Nazis, got their side of it. But then he corroborated it one way or another with others. And he came out with information that had never been discovered before. Now, when you do that, friends, when you come out with truth, you get in trouble. I know that. I'm familiar with that trouble issue. But in any case, I've never met David Irving myself, and I look forward to meeting him. And of course, I'm going to be there, and my precious and beautiful wife, Wanda, will be there. And we want to shake your hand, and I might even grab you and hug your neck. I don't know. I mean, if you, it could be dangerous, you know. The last guy that I hugged his neck, he just shrunk and fainted. And no, that didn't really happen. I'm making that up. But I'd really like to hug your neck. I'd like to shake your hand. And we'd like to get to know you. And if you don't want to get to know me, that's okay. At least come and listen to me. And I'm going to talk about something that, well, it'll be the first time in the whole world it's ever been discussed. I promise you that. You will hear things you will have never heard before at this one-night conference, about 4 hours long. And by the way, it's sort of like a banquet. I mean, you don't have to get dressed up like a banquet, but they're going to have dinner tables, and we're going to eat. Now, because of that, and because David Irving had to come a long way, all the way from Great Britain, They have to pay his expenses and such. And all they have to do is just get me from Texas. It'll be $90 a person or $160 a couple. $90 a person to register and get in. Okay? And when you're there, I'm going to have some of my books there. And if you'd like to have a copy, if you don't have a copy of my new book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, I hope I can have it there as well. And I'll be glad to autograph it for you. If you already have a copy, well, just bring it with you, and I'll autograph it right there at the meeting. Again, the cost of the evening is $160 a couple or $90 a person. It'll be well worth it. Again, I promise you, in things like this, there will be no profit made. This is just to take care of all of their expenses, you know, renting the facility and the cost of the meal. It'll be a very, very fine meal. And it'll be a first-class production and a wonderful group of like-minded folks that believe like you do. And if they don't, we will evangelize them and make sure they do. Did I really say that? Okay, why not? Now, here's what to do. To register, and by the way, this is the location is not very far from the international airport there, so it's easy to get in, okay, and get out. And you'll want to check and try to get a little cheaper motel or hotel. You know, I went on Google it up online and found a little cheaper place. Some of the places in that area, Washington, D.C., are outrageous. You know, $400 a night. I said, no way. I'm not going to pay that. Do they have a Motel 3? Or we'll double that and go to Motel 6. But whatever, I'm not going to pay that much. And I'm not paying it. So there you go. Okay? Now, a sweet girl named Julia will answer any questions you have on this and tell you where it's going to be. And by the way, just so we don't get a bunch of demonstrators there from the Occupy forces, although we'll bring them in and they'll learn something if they come, but I don't think they'll be there. She'll tell you on the phone where it's going to be, but I don't think they're publicizing it a lot, you know. So we want it as peaceful as we can. Please call Julia. Julia, here's her number now, 202, area code 202-544-5977. I'm sure it'll be a peaceful meeting. David Irving will talk, and then I'll talk, or vice versa. You'll hear things you've never heard before, I promise you. If not, well, I'm not going to give your money back because I know you're going to get a good meal anyway, but I will sympathize with you, but I think you're going to enjoy it, okay? I don't go to many conferences these days. I've been working and writing, especially on my new video, Die, America, Die, which will be out by the end of November. I hope you will go to this one-night conference. Get it all over with on one night, and man, you'll go out of there electrified in a nice way. Again, you can call Julia for more information. She'll even send you a map, and I promise you, you're going to like this conference. The location where it's held is really first class, and you're going to love it. You're going to see a lot of things. Okay, 202-544-5977 for details and to register. By the way, she'll probably also tell you you need to be a subscriber to the American Free Press. And, you know, it's a weekly newspaper. And you say, oh, do I have to subscribe to that and pay? Yes. But I'll tell you something. I get that newspaper. I love it. Boy, it has some information that's just fantastic. Okay, let's return to our regular program now. I know that took a little while, but I wanted to get all that out. Now, we were talking about the kingdom of Khazaria, this great kingdom that really did exist, and it really reached its zenith in the 10th century or so. The king, he claimed to have converted, and all the members of his court, as it turns out, were Jews, and he was a Jew, and he forcibly converted many of the people of Khazaria to Judaism. In fact, to the worst kind of Judaism, to Talmudic, the Babylonian Talmud, and they brought in rabbis from Baghdad in Iraq, which is ancient Babylon, to teach the people. So it turned out that the Jews, who had always wanted a great kingdom, finally got one. The kingdom of Khazaria, kingdom of the Jews. Now the Khazarian king and the people believed that someday they would rule the world. That's one of the things they liked about the Talmud. You see, they were already a very domineering imperialistic power that had taken over a lot of lands and conquered a lot of cities and towns and so forth in that area of the world. And now they converted to Judaism, and their new religion told them, you will rule the entire world and have all of its wealth at your fingertips. And all the people who are not Jews will be your servants. You will be the masters, the effendi, and they will be your servants. And if you want to, you can kill as many of them as you can. Because the Talmud says the best of the Gentiles kill. And you can have all their women. Because the Talmud says to have sex or to rape a Gentile woman is not a big deal. And you can have their children. Because the Talmud says that to have sex with a 9-year-old boy is not a big deal either. If you have sex as a pedophile with a boy up to the age of 9, it's nothing. Perfectly acceptable. Oh, you might have to do a little penance here and there, but you know, not really. If you have sex with a little girl of 3 years or less, that's okay too. Even incest, that's all right. That's according to the Talmud. You know, somehow I don't find that in the Old Testament, do you? But this is the true Jewish religion of the year 2011. But it was also the same religion in the year 1000 in the kingdom of Khazaria, a kingdom of the Jews. Now, when Prince Vladimir, an Orthodox Christian, came from Russia with his army, he put an end to that Judaic religion, that horrible, sexually lewd and vicious religion. And he sent the Jewish Khazars packing. Now remember, these Khazars, for the most part, the great majority of them, were not the descendants of Israelites. They had no blood of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob flowing through their veins. They were of Turkish and Mongol stock. You understand what I'm saying, friends? They were not Jews as we think of Jews. They were converts. And even the racial Jews, the blood Jews that had come there, married up with Khazar people and thus polluted the blood. In any case, the Khazar Jews, who again were not blood Jews that had come all through the generations, okay, from Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and all the prophets and so forth, all the way to the time of Jesus, they had no relationship up to that at all. They were pagan peoples who called themselves Jews. Now, it's interesting, in the book of Revelation, it talks about people like that. Them which say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. The Khazar Jews say we're Jews, but they're not. Sammy Davis Jr., the American black entertainer, converted to Judaism. He said, I'm a Jew. But he was not of the blood of the Jews. Marilyn Monroe converted in Hollywood to Judaism after she married Arthur Miller, whatever his name was, of the Jewish, you know, playwright or writer or whatever from New York City. She converted to Judaism, took instructions from a rabbi. And then Marilyn Monroe, before she killed herself, said, I'm a Jew. But she wasn't. Even Judaism does not really accept the Gentiles who convert. You're sort of a third-class Jew. A Jew in name only. The Khazars were Jews in name only. But they had the rituals. They believed in what the rabbis told them. They had their Babylonian Talmud. They had their sex rituals. They had their animal sacrifices. They killed their chickens at Kaparot and cut off their head and sprinkle the blood, just like Jews all over the world do today in Judaism. They had their Purim, where they celebrated the murders and the massacre of thousands of Gentiles. Remember Esther did that? Her and her cousin Mordecai. They liked that. They were used to killing people. The Khazars, they killed a lot of people in building up their kingdom. But too bad for these Khazar Jews, because their country was defeated by the Christians under Prince Vladimir I of Russia. And most of them fled the country. Others turned Christian, decided, well, we turned Jew. Now we're going to convert to Christianity so that Prince Vladimir and the Russians won't kill us. So they turned Christian. And I'm sure some Jews hid out. Just hid. But when Genghis Khan came, he found them and he disposed of them pretty fast. Took their money, took their lives. Did what he wanted to do. Genghis Khan was Genghis Khan after all. And he was a killer. Now, where did they flee to? History tells us that the Khazarian Jews fled to, well, some of them went to Russia and pretended to be Christian. Others went over to the west, to what we call today Eastern Europe, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Lithuania, Yugoslavia, even France, Belgium. And there they took up residence and built their little communities, and their rabbis started up the rituals again, and they all said, we're Jews. But they were Khazars. Some of them were real blood Jews, but most of them were not. They were Mongol Turks who had converted before. And remember, Judaism had the Khazar kingdom for up to 200 to 300 years before the Christians came under Prince Vladimir and conquered them. Now they have fled, and now they're over in Eastern Europe and to some extent in Western Europe. There were a few in Germany, there were a few in France, but mostly in Eastern Europe, Romania, Poland, Czechoslovakia, etc., Lithuania, Estonia. So the Jews settled in those areas, but they were Khazar Jews. They gave themselves a name, by the way. They call themselves the Ashkenazi Jews. The Ashkenazi Jews. And they sequestered themselves in their own little communities, and thus began the powerful Jewish, you know, communities of Europe, the ghettos they called them, although they were extremely rich. Rothschild came out of one of those, you know, in Germany. He's an Ashkenazi Jew. The majority of the world's Jews today are Ashkenazis. In fact, beginning in the late 1800s and the early 2000 era of the 20th century, these Ashkenazi Jews from all these countries, from Russia, Poland, Czechoslovakia, came to the United States. And today about 2% of the American population are Ashkenazi Jews. Now I ask you the question though, are they of Israelite stock? Are they of Mongol Turk Khazar stock? How can we know? Are they truly the blood of Abraham? If he was their ancestor, then I suppose if you believe the evangelical Christians, they have a right to the land in Israel. But what if they are not of Abraham? What if their ancestors never lived in Israel? They did not immigrate. When Israel, the Romans banished the people of Israel, and the diaspora began, and they went all throughout the world, even beyond Babylon. Those were not the Ashkenazi Jews. Now, some of them probably exist somewhere. Some say the Sephardic Jews, which are a decided minority in Israel today. Just, I don't know how many percent, but not very many. But in 1948, all these Ashkenazi Khazar Jews, especially from Russia and Eastern Europe, returned, quote unquote, to Israel. From where did they return? From their ancient homeland of Khazaria. Of course, in the intermediate period, they went into Europe and to Russia. They were European Russian Jews who had originally come from Khazaria. They were Khazar Jews. They're not of the blood lineage of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And if it's true, which I beg to differ with anyway, scripturally, but if it's true that the Jews have the promise of Abraham and should possess the land forever, then I say let the Jews possess the land. If they want to dispossess the Palestinians, okay, let them. Now, I don't really mean that. I'm just saying for principle, the principle that we're talking about. The Jews are supposed to have the land. It's their ancient land. God gave it to Abraham. And now we, American Christians, are supposed to help the Jews get the land and stay in the land of Israel and Jerusalem. Okay, but which ones are the Jews? And which ones are the Khazars that have absolutely nothing to do with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and the promise given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Where will the true Jews please stand up? The Ashkenazis are not the true Jews. Now, the Jews claim they are. Israel says, no, we're the true Jews. And you know, they've been getting away with that for a while, that lie, until in 1966, I think it was, two doctors from Great Britain named Watson and Crick came up with an amazing biological discovery called DNA. And now they can take a sample, a tiny little sample from somewhere on your body, a skin cell, saliva, a little bit of blood, or whatever, a little hair. And they can tell you what race you came from. They can give you an entire reading. You're 13% this, and 7% this, and 6% German, and 3%, uh-oh. And guess what? The researchers, and we're talking about prestigious universities like Harvard, Princeton, Berkeley in California, University of Texas. Yes, the University of Tel Aviv, the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, Cambridge and Oxford in England, researchers around the world in DNA, biology, are now finding that the majority of the people who are in Israel today as citizens who say they are Jews are not. Uh-oh. They're not Jews. Now, this led, by the way, the editor of the largest Palestinian newspaper, the largest daily newspaper that goes to the Palestinians. He has challenged the editor of the largest daily newspaper of Israel to sort of a blood duel, DNA. Now, the Palestinian editor says, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll go to a laboratory and we'll have all the witnesses with us and everything and the photographers and all that. And I'll have my blood tested for DNA and you have your blood tested for DNA. Now, these would be the top two newsmen, top media people of Palestine on one hand, Israel on the other. And the Palestinian challenge was this. We'll find out who has more blood. Okay? The blood of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you see, because they can now trace blood all the way back. Trace the DNA all the way back. They can find out if you were originally from a race known as the Israelites. Now, I don't want to get into all the details of how they do this, but it absolutely is true. They can trace a person all the way back to Africa. They say they've traced back the first woman that ever lived on earth through DNA. Lucy, I guess her name would be. That's what they claimed. They just gave her a name, Lucy. Friend, what race are you? Now, I'm sort of a Heinz 57 myself, mostly Scottish, a little bit Irish, a little bit even Indian. My mother tells me French. I don't know what I would find if I took a DNA test. Do you? But I know one thing, the Israel editor said, no, I'm not gonna have my DNA tested. See, he was afraid he may find out he's a Khazar. He didn't descend from Abrahamic stock. Netanyahu may not be a quote unquote Jew at all, unless he's a Khazar Jew. Now back to Jabulon. the combo god, let's call him. In my book, Codex Magica, which you must have, this book, Codex Magica, get it on powerofprophecy.com or here through the ministry. I show you very clearly that in the Masonic rituals, at one point, in fact, let's just say here, oh my goodness, what the Royal Arch Masonry, seventh degree of the York Rite, then the Scottish Rite, they have another one. They tell them in this degree that they're going to reveal to them the lost name of God. They call him the lost word, the lost name of God. And they find that the sacred name, the lost name of God, turns out to be Jabulon. And there is even a sign, the one where they take the hand and they hide it, slide it under the coat. Sort of like Napoleon had, Stalin had, even George Washington did. Oh, they had all been initiated into this ritual of Freemasonry in which Jabulon was recognized as the lost name of God. Now, I want to tell you about back in the 7th or 8th century, according to the Jewish encyclopedia, but you can read about it in any encyclopedia, the Khazars had a king they called Bulan. Would that be as in Jabulon, the Bulan of Jehovah? You see, the Jews added, there was already Baal or Bull, and On was the Egyptian god Osiris, and they added the third unholy trinity part, and that would be Jehovah. They combined the true God, Jehovah, with these satanic gods of sacrifice of the pagans, Baal and On or Osiris, so that Jehovah would be one of a unholy trinity of gods. What a desecration of the name of God. And the Masons learn then that the true God is Jabulon, who's the god of Bulan, the god of the Khazar kingdom. The Jews today recognize Jabulon, the Masonic Jews, as their true god. He's the serpent of the Kabbalah, the serpent god of the Kabbalah. And his name is Jabulon because he's an unholy trinity, three deities from hell. It's the recognition of the first great Jewish king of the kingdom of Khazaria, whose name was Bulan. That's the god of Bulan, of the Khazars. The Jews today honor the god of the Khazars. That's where they had their first great kingdom. They had prophesied, we will have the kingdom of the whole earth. And they thought that Khazaria would be it, but they were wrong. The Christians conquered them. Now you see why for centuries the Jews hated the Russians. And they were so thrilled in 1917 to take charge in Moscow with Lenin, Trotsky, and Stalin and go forth to kill 66 million, massacre 66 million during the years of communism, mostly Christians, and to burn down churches and turn them into brothels. Yes, they did that in Russia. Because they worshipped Lenin, Trotsky, all the rest of them. The Marxists all worshipped Jabulon. And he's worshipped today by Netanyahu and all of the evil Jews, Khazar Jews, who rule the world. This is Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy. Been great to be with you. Tune in each week during the same time and discover the power of prophecy.